Hey, good people. It's your girl, Fredrika McClary Easley, back with another episode of The People Are Blunt and Policy and the Plant. I love this segment. I know y'all do too, because y'all are always commenting. And so we're going to get into it. Before we do, let me handle a little bit of housekeeping. So you already know, we are on all the things: YouTube, Apple Music, Spotify, Amazon Prime. Like, subscribe, do all of the good things. Steve and I are both on IG, so hit us up. Here are his handles right here. We have Coach Jackpot. He is also on LinkedIn, so y'all see the information right there. Please make sure that you follow so that you can keep up with all of the amazing things that he has going on and what he's doing. And then, of course, it's just me over at The People Are Blunt on IG. We appreciate you all. You like the reels, you follow them, all that good shit. And so we need that. We need to know what you want to hear. We need to know what you like. And so you following, you commenting, those are all the things that help us to know that. And so without further ado, we're going to get into it. Steve, how you doing today, baby? Uh-oh, your sound. What happened?
Can you hear me?
It's like going in and out. Say something. Mic check. 1, 2, 1, 2.
Check. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
It's sounding weird. And we were just talking, y'all. We were just talking for literally like 20 minutes before all this. Clear as day.
Yeah. Can you hear me now?
I can. It's not as good as it was earlier, but I can't hear you. Say something.
Mic check. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
I wonder what happened. We were just all clear. What did you do? All you did was plug in your computer?
Yeah, I didn't do anything.
All right. Well, just stay leaning forward a little bit, because that was a little clear when you just said, I ain't do anything.
I need to just speak louder. I could just speak louder.
Oh, wait. Sit back. What'd you just do? Now say something.
I said, if I just need to speak louder, I could just speak louder.
Okay. Well, whatever. Stay right there. We are cool right there. Okay.
Okay.
So today, what we're going to be talking about, what everyone is talking about, is this rescheduling piece, right? HHS released their rules that prompted the DEA to weigh in. It took them about, God, maybe about 7 to 8 weeks, right? Took them a little bit of time. The DEA finally released their rules in terms of moving cannabis from a Schedule 1 to a Schedule 3. And so now we are here within the public comment period that is up as of July 22nd, right? So here we are in this period. What the DEA released was their ruling, and there were about 8 sections, right? It was about a 92-page document. There are about 8 sections. A majority of those sections were on abuse and addiction in terms of the things that they're concerned about. And so, of course, we're going to talk about that shit here, and we're going to get into the science. I'm going to throw it to you, Steve. So when you first saw the release of the DEA rules, what was the first thing that came to mind for you? Like, what was your take?
I think the first thing that I thought about was obviously that Schedule 3, you know, why Schedule 3? It's not that we were all surprised that that's what they proposed, but we still wanted to know, like, what were the actual justification behind it? And to find out that a lot of that justification was surrounded around addiction and abuse, you realize that, like, yes, it's taken some step forward on paper. On paper, it went from Schedule 1, meaning no medical use, to Schedule 3, meaning low to moderate addiction or abuse. But truthfully, we know that that's lumping in a lot of things that don't represent the plant that we're talking about. So synthetics are getting lumped in. The stuff you're seeing in gas stations is getting lumped in. And if we can really, like, have those conversations and make it clear, should it be Schedule 3 or should it be descheduled like some of us wanted? So my mind automatically thinks about, you know, where this goes down the line. And I think now that they've acknowledged that there is some medical use, we got to use that, right, as, you know, education to combat this hyper focus on abuse, because, you know, we're going to talk about it, but America has an overconsumption problem with sugar, with caffeine, with tobacco, we overconsume things. Our portion sizes are much larger than they were 30 years ago. We have an overconsumption problem. So I think the same way that hamburgers don't get blamed for the obesity rate and all the heart issues, right? We know how dangerous alcohol is. It's a neurotoxin, but there's a consent. If you're 21 and up and you buy this product, there's a certain responsibility on you. And it's implied with you having to show your ID to purchase. That's it. So cannabis is kind of getting this like unprecedented focus on abuse when opioids and stuff and fentanyl have much greater impact on society right now from that perspective. So that's what I thought. That was everything that kind of ran through my mind. When I saw that, you know, my brain is like going crazy.
We lost your picture, babe. All right, there you are. Yay. We will edit that out. It's fine. But no, so it was so interesting. You and I had a conversation like shortly after that. And also, good people, please go back and review past episodes of Policy in a Plant where Steve digs into intoxicating hemp. So that is a part of what he was talking about the other things that are being lumped into this. And also digging into, you know, the plant in and of itself and like how we're separating it and what is known as. I think that was a great point in terms of, as a society, we over consume, right? Because when I think about abuse, I think about personalities. I think that like we all know people who just do too much. We all know people who just have like abusive personalities. They're the people who they can't go out and just have one drink, or they're not, you know, they can't just, what was that, Lay's potato chips? I bet you can't eat just one. It's a lot of people who definitely cannot just do, you know, whatever the minimum is. You know, even if they receive something and it says, this is the suggested intake, like this is how much is per serving. We know that folks do not follow that by and large, right? By and large. And so one of the things that you and I talked about, and when we broke this down and when you brought the science in, I was just like, oh shit, mind blown. Because I didn't necessarily know that it was a term for it. But what we talked about is how addicting anything could be. Like everything has the potential to be abused or to be addictive, right? And so I'm going to pull this up because you shared this with me, and I want to make sure that we talk about this, right? Because this is not opinion, right? This is literally from the National Library of Medicine. And what it talks about is fatal water intoxication. And so when you brought this to my attention, I was like, yo, this is crazy. So let's dig into it. Now, I know we have the words on the screen, but just give the people a synopsis, if you will, about like, what exactly is this?
Yeah, so to give some background, right? And this is, you know, the reason that I brought this up is because it sounds like what it is, but it also makes you realize that what we said the first episode, words mean things. So everybody likes to throw intoxication around when it comes to cannabis, intoxication. And sometimes as a society, we fill in the blanks of what intoxication, what we think it means. We think intoxication means overconsumption. We think intoxication means abuse. Well, truthfully, as a scientist, you know, one of the ways that we squash arguments is we go to the research. We go to what the words say. So there's a such thing as fatal water intoxication. However rare it is something that happens. So it happens a lot in like marathon runners. You know, I'm a Marine, so people who are in the military, they'll actually overhydrate right before they go out in the extreme heat and do something that really taxes their body. They actually mess up their sodium levels so fast and their different electrolyte levels so fast, they can actually die. So it's called water intoxication. My point of bringing that up is, and the point of putting it on the screen is, if you can be intoxicated from water, if there's a such thing as fatal water intoxication, you have to realize like there is a perception problem of when we hear words. We hear that there are people hearing that cannabis can cause intoxication, And they're running with that as their reason as to why a child shouldn't have access to that medicine, as to why a cancer patient shouldn't have access to that medicine. Somebody with Alzheimer's, dementia, all this research, we're acting like it doesn't exist and that it shouldn't be. I said at this point, there is nothing that is safe 100%. There is a risk-reward trade-off on everything. If you can drink too much water and then go out and exercise and die, we need to learn what it's like to treat our bodies well. That's the issue. We have an abusive relationship with our bodies. We overconsume, so things are irregular so much. The water intoxication thing is kind of like, you know, to get people to open their minds that any, you know what I'm saying? There's a lot of stuff that can be intoxicating. But at the same time, it's when people throw that word out there in a policy meeting as like it's some big joker and like, well, if it's intoxicating, well, no, there's no other card that beats that. It's like, nah, man, deuces wild. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, hey, cannabis overconsumption is a possibility. It's not something that any of us has said doesn't happen. Now, the risk of what the science says, if we look at the science, compared to opioids and alcohol and these other things, it is a much significantly smaller risk compared to the trade-off of the benefits. It helps that child with the seizure, right? Our grandparents with Alzheimer's and dementia. We would much rather trade that take that trade-off, move the policy in a place where we can get the research to reduce even that little bit of risk, reduce it even smaller. But that's why we have to not let, you know, people throw the word intoxication out in our face and be like, well, that's it.
Yeah.
It can't win. Cannabis will never win because it's intoxicating. No. We got to educate ourselves. Words mean things.
That's right. Words mean things, man. And we got to help. You know, there's this idea that these politicians, that they know it and that they have it. You know what I mean? And the reality is that they don't. And so we have to educate them. I'm so happy that you touched on research, because one of the other, to me, important parts of this rescheduling. And also, let's be clear that the ultimate goal is freeing the plant and freeing people, right? The ultimate goal is descheduling, right? We're talking about rescheduling because that's where we are right now. Like, that's what's on the table. That's what's on the plate, okay? But you brought up research. And so this is very important to me as we're normalizing this plant. To your point, making sure that those outlier cases of people having a less than stellar engagement with the plant, we keep lessening that, right? And to me, or for me, that is going to come from research. That is going to come from learning more and more about this plant, about the properties of it, the different cannabinoids, and also making sure that our medical professionals, you know, are tapped into this so that people can actually start getting advice. They can be advised on their consumption, on their journey, on their wellness practices, the way that you are for other prescribed pieces. So can you touch on this research piece for me?
Yeah, I think research is really one of the reasons I decided to be a scientist is because I actually heard somebody ask like this question that I can never get out of my mind. It says, does science govern research? Does policy govern research, or does research govern policy?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So are we making decisions to limit things based on our opinions that we should be studying to make our opinions? Or you see what I'm saying? It's literally a chicken or the egg thing. And in science, we actually use it as a motivator. Like, it's hard to be a scientist, to go to school and do all this reading and literature reviews. But one of the motivators is hopefully to make humanity better, to make society better, hopefully. So when you look into some of this stuff, it's like, hey, it's my job as the person who's doing these literature reviews of 200 page papers. I need to make it digestible to my mother, so that she can tell her friends, so that the elders in the church can talk to each other. Because there's elders in the church that will say it's cannabis is intoxicating and I hate it. And they'll be the same person that could benefit from joint pain, sleeve, you know what I mean? All the disorders that you look up when you see the research properties. So that's why I think it's like research to me, I'm not saying it should like blindly govern policy, but it should have a seat at the table. when it comes to making policy, humans have opinions, but there's also some things that research has shown, like, hey, if you tested in Switzerland, in Germany, in Australia, in America, in Japan, if you look in all these places, when they research cancer and THC, right, they're seeing similar things. That means as humanity, how about we all say, cool, we're all good here, we agree. This is probably more beneficial than it is harmful. And we know you can overconsume from THC. But again, as a medical professional, you tell people there's no cannabinoid receptors in the brainstem. Opioid overdose causes from an overstimulation of the receptors in your brainstem, because that's where your breathing is. Mm-hmm. So it's overactive. You can consume too much opioids, overstimulate your brainstem, overdose. Cannabis receptors are not in the brainstem. Mm. Even if you overconsume, you go to sleep. You pass out. You may be anxious. That's like, you know, I think anxious is one of the worst case scenarios. But from natural cannabis flower, you know, this intoxication thing is, it's a word game and it works. So we have to educate ourselves. And that's where I think research plays its part in putting, you know, to have a seat at the table. They're like, what do you bring? You know, people say, what are you bringing to the table? I'm bringing research.
I'm bringing facts, baby. You know what I mean? And,
no, a lot of the policy meetings that I've been in have actually motivated me to speak up more, because I've been in meetings in Indiana state capitol with all Republicans. And I was like, they want me to talk to them about cannabis and psychedelics.
Yeah.
Whoa, Indiana.
Yeah.
So the truth is, like, in those meetings, the education comes less from a scientist and less from a Marine.
Yeah.
You know, and more from a Marine, more from somebody. I'm like, hey, every Black man in my family has served since World War I. Mm-hmm. And PTSD is something that is pretty bipartisan. We all know somebody. If you live in America, you likely know somebody that has PTSD. Now take into account childhood trauma, domestic abuse, right? Like, PTSD is much more general than just veterans. So now that they're like, I guess we never thought about it like that. Y'all didn't know this was a bipartisan issue? This was something that, right?
Well, you know, this is an election year, right? And so one of the things that's like near and dear to my heart, right, is issue-based campaigns, issue-based decisions, issue-based work. I feel like that often takes a lot of that that bias and that, you know, the opinion out of it, and we can really focus on fact. The fact is that cannabis, this plant is often being cited as a way in helping with people who have opioid and meth addictions, right? Like, that's a fact. That is not me, like, just kind of guesstimating here and pontificating. That is a fact, right? Like, that is what's going on at treatment facilities. And so to your point about this research and why it's so important, the research is actually what got us here. Because about 10 years ago, there was a push on the DEA to reschedule, to deschedule. And they said, guess what? We don't have the data. And so now, because we have 38 states that are regulated in some way, shape, or form, and we have medical, medical professionals who are now tapping into this, and we have on record, medical patients. Those are the things that were specifically cited by HHS and DEA to say, I mean, how do we ignore this? Like, we have the data now. And so what we have to do, and why it's so important for people to actually tap into these public comments and to tap in to your local and your state officials as we are pushing to free this plant, to regulate this plant, to normalize this plant, is to make sure that people understand that all cannabis consumption is wellness, that everybody is a patient, whether you, like, don't let them separate, oh, their recreation, their adult use over here, and their medical. Everybody is a patient, because to your point, Stephen, we have PTSD. We have, you know, women have things going on with our bodies in terms of our reproductive things that we experience every month, that is pain. Men, y'all have stuff going on, especially our veterans have stuff going on. And so what we all can understand is wanting to feel well, wanting to be well in our bodies. So I want to just kind of like wrap this up in terms of, you know, the DEA moving forward, you know, knock on wood with this rescheduling thing and this whole argument about intoxicating. What do you really want people to know in terms of this fear on abuse or addiction of the plant?
We have an overconsumption problem. That's what it really boils down to. The fear is overconsumption. Yeah. The science is already there. I just told you about the brainstem. That's not something I would say publicly if I hadn't, right? Not only read the papers, but all the top experts, it's in the literature. I didn't do the research, but it's been cited so many times. We can agree that people who are considered subject matter experts in the topics of health and wellness and these different things, the risks are so low that this intoxication conversation is not what it's about, right? We're talking about intoxication as a word and using it as a reason to slow things down, but that's not actually the issue right now. And the more of us that are educated, you know, there are people who write policy who get shocked when they hear about the endocannabinoid system, or they hear about the difference between synthetic full plant medicine. You know, some of them are educated and some of them are veterans and some of them have, you know, family members with PCOS, family members with PTSD. This is something that can help. I said, if you have a sleep issue, if you have a pain issue, or if you have some type of dietary issue, cannabis likely can provide you some type of aid. That's most people with one of those three. So I think at some point in time, it's going to be less of an argument between who's right and who's wrong. And I think we're shifting more now to who gets to be right.
That's it right there. That's it right there. Who gets to be right? Who is willing to kind of take that step back and be like, my bad. You know what I mean? We call this the boogeyman. It's not. My bad. A lot of people don't, you know, a lot of people, it's very difficult for them to admit when they're wrong. And especially in the case of cannabis, because lives have been lost. You know what I mean?
There's people still in jail right now. That's what we always have to remember. Like, I tread carefully, but I speak firmly because I know for a fact there are still people in jail right now.
Yeah. There are people in jail. There are people making money. You know what I'm saying? Off this plant, you know, people are literally in our prison industrial complex, like this system, as slaves, you know, free labor, you know? So all of those things exist. And so, you know, that is this country in and of itself having to accept responsibility for what they have created with this, and also how they have internationally influenced other countries in regards to their policies around this plant. So, but it's time, and like, there can be healing in that. And definitely we can start to repair this harm and right these wrongs. And for the sake of, you know, not getting egg on your face, what we can't do is just allow the status quo to be. That's what we can't do. You know, we can't do that. So I would also say one of the gems I'm taking, because you always drop in gems, but one of the gems I'm taking away from this is that intoxication is not overconsumption. And we cannot interchange those two. And that is something that is happening more often than not. We need to correct it. Okay? We cannot interchange those two. And so with that, Steve, take us out.
The people are blunt.
So next time, y'all, policy and the plant, the people are blunt. We love y'all. We'll be back. Look, when in the know, be contagious. So please watch this shit. Please share it broadly, because this is the way we get free, y'all. This is how we get free. Mm-hmm. Till next time.